What's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
We're on week six of the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
That's pretty crazy. 6 weeks of listening and learning at the Learning Studio.
Here we are, live at the Learning Studio. So we're actually at Sarah's childhood home right now. It's Shabbat, and we had a nice little Shabbat with her parents, and I'm so grateful they welcomed me into their warm Jewish home. It was lovely.
Did you really enjoy it? Don't lie.
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
What could I say that would make you feel as though...
Just be truthful.
I enjoyed it.
But like, just don't lie.
Okay, here I am professing my truth to you. It was great. We had couscous and chicken. And asparagus. How do you say asparagus in French?
Asperge.
Okay, that one isn't as exciting. How do you say zucchini?
Courgette.
Courgette.
Anywho, so before we even tell you about this week's episode, let's do a peek and pit of the week.
Okay.
Hashtag pit and peek of the week.
Hashtag pit and peek of the week?
It was like hashtag pit and peek of the week.
Okay, hashtag peek of the week. Okay, I can start.
Okay.
My pit is very obvious. I was just sick like all week and I posted about it a little bit on my Instagram stories. And I think as I've gotten older, I realized that my physical sickness can deplete me a lot of like my emotional health too. And my therapist actually confirmed that for me. Thank goodness for her. She was like, "It not only does it exhaust you emotionally, like sickness, like a virus will take all of your energy out, which depletes your emotional health, but also like when you're an adult and you're sick, it feels very alone and isolating because you have to take time off from work and it's hard to take time off and like just lie in bed. Like you're not going on vacation, you're not doing something productive. And it's just hard for me to lie there and like not do things. And then I'm going to do one of those classic flippity flips. And my peak of the week was actually in therapy yesterday, and my therapist said something that just felt so new to me, which is always really thrilling when you learn a new concept in therapy that clicks in your brain. And she was like, not doing anything when you're sick is productive. Trying to be like quote unquote productive when you're sick and you're beating yourself up for lying in bed is counterproductive, and it can make your healing last longer. It can make the healing time, it can make the healing duration longer. And so being able to lie in bed and not do anything is the best thing that you can do for yourself when you're sick. And it just felt really nice and reassuring to hear someone say that, because it's kind of crazy that I'm so hard on myself for being sick, but it's hard to not be like constantly going and doing when you're 23 and living in New York. So it was really special that she said that, and it resonated with me.
I love that.
Hashtag peak of the week.
It's so true. Like, when you, it's like gym, it's like going to the gym. Like everyone knows that in order to be productive at the gym, you do need a rest day, or you can't, or if you're a runner, let's say if you're a runner, because I don't, some people go to the gym truly every single day, but I'm not like, this isn't facts, but like, I'm pretty sure that
it's not hard science.
It's not hard science, but like I didn't do research on this and I don't have anything to back this up, but like, I'm pretty sure that people say you should take one day of the week to give yourself a rest if you're going to the gym all the time.
At least, yeah.
Because in order to get better and to be more productive at the gym, you need to give your body time to heal and your muscles to, like, kind of rest for a day.
Like, not every day is leg day. You need to rest your legs one day. And even if you go to the gym the next day, you do arms. Like, you can't...
Exactly.
You can't make your muscles better if you're constantly exhausting them.
Exactly. Kind of like... Yeah, when I take a sick day, I completely understand. I'm sitting there all day. I'm just like, well, I haven't done anything, and now I'm moping, and I was sick, but now I feel even worse because I'm just like upset
that
I feel
totally.
Like I'm not doing anything. But like, I feel like in the past year, I've really like forced myself to be like, I am sitting here, and that's okay because this is what I need in order for me to get up tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a long-term vision.
It's a long-term regime.
So my pit of the week was that I had a really busy work week, but to bring it right into the hashtag peak of the week, I think sometimes being busy, although it's very stressful, and there's a lot going on. My boss is out this week. She's in China. There's a lot going on. At the same time, it can also provide you with such a sense of like productivity that you're kind of like, I text my friends at the end of the day and I'm like wired. I'm like, what's going on? What's up, everyone? Like, how's everyone doing?
Whatever is everyone saying about?
Yeah. And I was like, and they're just like, are you okay? And I'm just like, yeah, I just did a lot of, and they're
so fired up.
Yeah. They're like, did you have a lot of coffee? I'm like, no, I've just been doing so much at work. I just completed this. This just is done. And now, and now just go check your TV because our commercial's live. Like, they're like,
is everything okay?
Yeah. They're like, are you okay? It being busy at work, not only does it make the day go faster, but it's also like you feel accomplished, which is like,
you feel what?
Accomplished.
Oh, you said accomplished.
You feel accomplished. You feel accomplished. I don't even know what accent that is, but you just feel accomplished, and it's a really good feeling. So that's my hashtag peak of the week.
I totally relate. I had I also had a very busy week at work, and while it can be stressful,
okay, no one cares. I'm just kidding.
Move along. Like, it was just busy, but sometimes you look up and you're like, oh, I'm glad I was busy because now it's like 3 and I get to go home soon, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
So it can be good for sure.
Awesome. I meant to say,
we're
agree.
Awesome. I absolutely agree.
I absolutely agree. That's so funny.
Okay, so this week we wanted to kind of follow up from last week's therapy topic. We kind of wanted to follow up from last week's episode and talk a little bit more about our personal experiences in therapy. I think last week was very helpful. It was a little bit more on the clinical side.
Informative.
How do we find therapists? And this week we kind of wanted to just like shoot the shit and talk about what therapy is actually like.
That's literally the perfect word for what I was envisioning for this episode.
Shoot the shit?
Yeah, just shooting the shit.
Shit the shoot.
We're shooting our shoot. No.
I'm shooting my shot.
Shoot it's your shot. Season. Did you shoot your shoot? Wait, no, never
that's
mind.
Like, that's like a Kidz Bop version. Did you shoot your shoot?
It's like, why
are kids great till they... No, it's, why are friends great till they gotta be great? I just took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% that kid.
Jinx!
No, deadass, those are the lyrics.
Oh, the Kidz really? Bop
version. Yeah, Sarah.
Oh, I just made that up.
Oh my god, you are...
I'm brilliant.
Freaking genius.
As Liz said, the goal of this episode is really for us to just shoot the shit. And if you're 12, more just like talk shoot the talk.
Shoot. Yeah.
Shoot the shoe.
Talk about it.
And it's like, it's fine, I'm fine. Kidz Bop. We're stressed. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. But we'll get through it at school. Yeah.
Well, that was good.
Thanks.
We can write a musical for kids about mental health.
It's fine. Write it down. Musical.
Write it down. Manifesting it.
Yeah. So.
At Talkspace.
At Talkspace, at Headspace, at Liz, at
Debbie.
At Debbie, that's what I was thinking. Last week's episode was more so just about finding a therapist and where to start, and this week's episode is more about our experiences because Liz and I have both been to therapy.
We go to therapy.
We go to therapy, and we love it. So
we do love it.
Let's just shoot the shit.
Do you want to tell me about something cool that happened to you in therapy last time you were there? To just kickstart her off?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I love about therapy, I don't know if I can specifically remember something that happened last time, but recently my therapist has very much been validating the progress that I've been making. Hmm. And sometimes it's like really, really hard to see what progress you're making when you just feel like you're going and sitting and talking about, you know, your weekly or daily or yearly struggles that you're going through. Like something that might be like constant or something that is, you know, maybe like a one-time thing, but like, it just feels like sometimes it feels like you could just be sitting down and complaining and like, you don't feel like you're making progress because you keep sitting down talking about things. And it really takes someone else to be listening consistently to actually see, like, you might be complaining about this now, but a year ago I saw you and you were like 10 times more upset about this and you would have never taken this approach and you would have never taken this angle.
Right.
And for that, like, you should be really proud of yourself. And it's just like, no one else is really like, not examining you, but no one else is really like studying your progress.
And your dynamic with your own self-talk. I actually think it's really interesting because you're with yourself 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's harder for you to track progress. Whereas when you see a therapist every week or every 2 weeks, like, they can really see a difference in you.
Exactly.
And plus you're you. So you can't always identify the progress that you're making because you're just inherently hard on yourself.
Right.
Not you, like,
yes.
Everyone
absolutely.
On the planet.
Just like we said in the Happiness Podcast episode 1, we were like, you always think you'll be happy when. And then that thing happens, and then you have something new that you are like, okay, well, yeah, this happened, but now I'll be happy when this other thing happens.
Right.
It's kind of like you're making progress, but you're still, at least this is how I am. I can see myself in making progress, but I don't give it to myself. I don't give myself the credit because I'm like, well, I'm still bad at this.
Yeah.
Or like, well, yeah, maybe I've gotten better at that, but like, that doesn't mean that I'm not doing this. Mm-hmm. And she's like, stop. Look at yourself. Like last time I went, she was like, let's just like think about a few of the progressions that you've made this year. And I was just like, I like get uncomfortable talking about
like good things that you've
good
done.
Good things that I've done because yeah. I'm kind of, I'm a little superstitious. It's kind of a mix of like superstition, self-doubt. And I also like, I don't like speaking too soon because I'm like, well, you know, now that you say that, next week I'm going to be crying over this.
That's the superstition thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And also like I don't really ever let myself be happy because I'm so scared of it being taken away from me. And I don't.
Happy and sad at the same time.
Exactly. At Casey Musgraves, sponsor us.
It's actually at Spacey Casey, but either way. I don't know if she's going to.
So right. But yeah, that's just something that I struggle with at therapy, but I love that I just like have this hype woman and she is just, you know, always kind of being, you know what therapy is? I have a metaphor. Anxiety for me, you know, like those old like cartoons, of, like a devil on your shoulder and an angel on your shoulder.
Sure do.
My anxiety is the devil on my shoulder that's always like, you're a failure.
You're doing really poorly.
You know, mm-hmm. Like I'm like, oh my God, I was so good at that.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't.
You know? And
you absolutely were not.
Yeah. I absolutely disagree. Yeah. Like, my anxiety is the devil on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And my therapist is the angel that's coming in with her speakerphone being like, stop talking over us. Mm-hmm. She's great. Mm-hmm. Like, the devil's like, you need to take 10 steps back because... You, oh my God, I totally forgot to say my peak of the week is that I was hired as a yoga instructor this week.
Fist bump. That is your peak of the week.
I was hired as a yoga instructor at Core Power Yoga, my yoga studio, and I'm really happy, really excited. To be honest with you, it hasn't really hit me yet. It doesn't feel real. It feels like imposter syndrome.
It will feel more real when you're doing it, though, I think.
For sure. But, like, I'm even still scared to say I was hired because I'm like, well, what if something goes wrong? What if they change their mind?
And also, like, do I deserve it? Like,
yeah, exactly.
What else? It's kind of, not to flip your own dialogue on its axis, but when you're saying, like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you're having a good time? Like, I know you're kidding, but there's also part of you, I know you, you're very, like, introspective and making sure that people are like just honest and truthful with you, which I think is very human, but it's like it's this idea like people aren't gonna say how they actually feel. I'm a burden. How did I don't deserve this. It's like these mantras, these really negative mantras that we kind of tell ourselves, and like we have to get out of our own head because A, you are a yoga instructor, like you were certified and you were hired, but also like you, like there's only so many things that life, there's only so many reassurances that life can give you. Yeah. You have to be able to like give it to yourself.
I know. Yeah. And like I was hired and it's just, it's really exciting and I'm really happy about it. I feel like something inside of my brain is still being like, okay, so you got hired. That doesn't mean you're going to be any good. That doesn't mean now all these other anxieties are starting to come up.
Yeah, it's
and so my therapist is like literally the good shoulder with a speakerphone, like talking over the devil on my shoulder. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I don't like calling it devil, but like, you know what I mean?
It's like the bad voice.
The bad voice. And she's kind of like yelling at the bad voice, being like,
she's not making it go away.
No,
but
she's just
amplifying the good.
Exactly. And she's kind of talking over it, being like, stop letting that convince you because the good voice should be just as loud. Like, the bad voice should not take over your thoughts.
Right.
Of course, everyone has self doubt. And if you don't, then.
Congratulations. Why are you listening to this
podcast? Yeah. Get out.
Get out
of here.
Yeah.
Hey, get out of here.
You don't need this. Hey, man.
Yeah.
Get out of my yard.
You know, I love your work. Hey, get out of here. But, yesterday was actually with her. But anyways, the reason I brought that up was just because it's really hard for me to acknowledge my successes. Mm-hmm. And the minute I succeed at something, I'm already thinking about how I'm now going to fail in this new success.
Or like, this doesn't count because I did it in
exactly.
a way that was like cheating the system somehow.
Which is like... That is what I think. I'm like, well, I must have cheated the system.
It's I think the same.
I literally went to a yoga training 3 times a week for 4 months. I did 250-hour training. I did an intensive weekend of training, and then I auditioned.
I'm saying I was gesturing for Sarah to, I was using a hand gesture like keep going, but I think she meant, I meant like stop talking.
Yeah.
But I was saying like you're doing it. You're explaining to yourself why you deserve.
Oh, yeah. This. I thought you were like, what's the point?
No, I was saying like this is the way that she was describing all the actions that she took to get to be hired by the studio and
yes,
to be certified. Exactly. Are the way that you can talk to yourself to remind yourself, actually, like, I do deserve this thing. And hopefully someday you won't have to walk through all those steps. It will just be like, hey, I did this. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah. Period.
Actually, because this, I think this is going to be more of like a free-flowing episode, I wanted to talk about something that's like a little bit hard about therapy, which I
was about to ask you what you liked about therapy.
So what I like but is also hard is like, I like the same thing you like, which is I like having a cheerleader and someone reminding me that, like, I deserve the things I have, but it can be really hard and, like, uncomfortable for me to say, I had this challenging conversation with a peer that was bothering me, and my therapist to be like, that was really brave. And I want to be like, no, it wasn't. Like, I'm a human being. You're supposed to have conversations with other people. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we're social. Why is that brave? And I would never say that to her because she's lovely and I trust her. And I understand that she always says this to me. She's like, I can't lie. Like, I wouldn't lie to you. It's not ethical. It's not like what I do. So I'm kind of thinking like, am I brave for having this conversation? And like, it's just hard for me to fathom, but it is brave. Like, how many steps do I have to take to get to have that uncomfortable conversation? How many hurdles do I have to jump through in my own mind? How many times do I have to like get up at my desk and then sit back down because like I'm not ready to have a hard conversation with someone? So it is brave. And in my brain, I'm doing that thing of like, well, what's actually brave is people are trying to feed their kids and they can't, and it's brave mm-hmm. of them to try and like put themselves out there and get a job and whatever. And it's like, that's brave too.
Mm-hmm.
No one is like, what I really like about therapy, but can be very challenging because of the same imposter syndrome is like, you don't have to compare your challenge to someone else's. And a therapist is constantly reminding you of that. Mm-hmm. Every time I sit down to therapy, I'm like, well, I know that like my problem really isn't that bad because like yeah. I have it good. Like it's a first world problem. And she's like, no, because first of all, it's not what you're experiencing right. is in your brain and therefore it's real. But also you trying to dumb down your problems to match like other people's is counterproductive to your problem.
Yep.
It's not going to make your problem go away. You trying to have a conversation with another person in your workplace just because it's different from someone maybe trying to feed their family or going through even someone having cancer, is that bad? Yes. Is what you're going through feeling real and bad to you? Yes. So it's like you can't compare them. So that can be something that I think is really good about therapy and that we all struggle with, but it's like also really hard to just have someone be like, that was really brave of you to do, because you're conditioned to be like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
No,
but I think a lot of times when people tell me like, oh, that was brave of you to do, or like, wow, or people, if whenever someone's like impressed with me or thinks that I'm, you know what gets me when people are like, wow, you're so strong. Like, it's kind of like, you're so brave. I'm like, I'm so strong. Like,
yeah, what kind of a word is that?
What do you mean I'm so strong? I'm just sitting here crying. And they're like, that's strength. And it took me a while to understand that. I don't know. I hope that relates to what you're saying about bravery, but it's like you don't feel like you're actually being brave because you're comparing it to other people and like situations that you quote unquote think are more like real or tougher. And that you're like, that's brave. But like, it's like when someone says like, you're so strong, I'm like, no, strength is like being able to like get over something quickly and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's strength. Like, I'm not strong. Is this relating?
No, it is. And it's funny you say that because I'm like, she's like, you're brave. And I associate brave with like Disney princesses, literally. Like,
yeah.
You're brave for climbing that mountain and saving your yeah. dad from the castle.
Yeah.
Like it's so it's hard, but it's like, no, bravery, it doesn't feel brave to me because it feels sloppy. Like
mm-hmm.
all the times that I try to do something, have a conversation, and I just like kind of can't, and I end up like spitting it out.
Right.
Just because it's not like the perfect formula of solving a problem, you're taking steps to solve a problem.
Right.
That's brave because you could sit there and let yourself wallow in this problem.
Right.
But yeah, this concept of strength, it's like when you yeah. think of strength, you think of like, you know, ancient like religious
yeah.
warriors, like, you know, solving mankind's problems. Like that's, and she was strong, like
right.
the Torah said,
or like,
you know?
Sometimes like when I, like in my head, you know, I feel like when people are able to kind of let go of a problem quickly or not harp on it in their minds or get over something quickly or get over someone quickly.
That's strength.
In my head, I'm like, well, that's strong. Mm-hmm. And people always have to remind me, like, they're most likely going through the same thing, but they're not talking about it or they're not really processing their emotions. And that's not as strong as you think it is. Mm-hmm. Listen, if that's your way of handling things, that's fine.
I'm fine.
But everyone's different. And, like, for me, it would not be strong of me, quote unquote, to just move on, because that's not – what takes strength is facing the issue at hand, mm-hmm. and being like, okay, like, I'm going to tackle this, or even if it's a day where I'm like, I'm not going to let my anxiety get the best of me. Like, that's strength. And it's just, it doesn't feel like it is. But it's also nice when the therapist has – the reason why she's able to say, like, that was brave of you is because she knows you, she's mm-hmm. seen you, and she sees the progress. So she sees the before and after, and she's like, wow, that was brave.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you just met someone in the street – and they're, like, the most, like, confrontational person ever. And you're like, yeah, I confronted my coworker the other day. Like, they probably wouldn't be like, wow, that's so brave. Because they don't know. Every single person's, like, bravery or strength is completely relative. Different. And it's relative. So, like, for you, it was brave because you're making progress. Mm-hmm. And for someone else who might be, like, super confrontational and they need to take a step back, maybe one day they took a step back and they're like, that's brave for them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
So it's all relative.
I think the good thing about therapy is, like, there's never a moment where I feel like there's nothing to talk about.
Some people do struggle with that, though.
I know. And in fact,
yesterday –
it's
really interesting because we talk so much.
We talked so much. Yesterday I was in therapy, though, and there was, like, probably a 20-second silence, and I was so uncomfortable. I was like,
oh, no.
Am I supposed to fill this?
We should make a meme about that.
Like, uncomfortable therapy silences.
Yeah.
Because she was waiting for me to, like, reflect. Like, she wants me to reflect. I don't always have to be talking, like –
yeah.
For God's sakes, Liz, I don't always have to be talking.
Yeah.
But it was just hard because, like, I'm like, this is empty space. But it's really a moment where I'm supposed to be, like, either reflecting on what was just said or thinking about, like, the next step I need to take in therapy to talk about something.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. In yoga, part of the training that we do is becoming comfortable with silence. Mm. Because you, like, when I first started my training, I didn't understand what they meant when they said you have to hold space for others. I didn't get what that meant.
I don't know what it means either. You'll
so,
have to teach me.
Yeah, of course. And so I was more nervous about my actual physical ability to practice yoga. And then once I went through training, I realized the whole point of being a teacher is not how good you are at yoga.
Yeah.
It's about, can you hold space for others? Meaning, can you guide others without being this, like, show and telly person at the front, holding space and allowing others to grow and practice and be individuals in the room and without judgment, without feeling like you have to go in the front of the room and show them how it's done? You're guiding them with your voice. You're directing them through your voice, through hand assists. Yoga isn't always the physical part of it. It's also just, like, holding space. Like, a lot of people go into the room for support that can't even be put into words. Like, they kind of just want this, like, feeling of community, and they want to feel supported. Even in silence, being able to kind of say, you're supported here. It's kind of hard to put into words.
Because it's silence.
Yeah. But I've had to get really comfortable with silence. You might think that not speaking is, like, uncomfortable, but, like, they're trained not to have to, like, say something every second. They're kind of just, like, there for you.
Yeah.
You know?
And trying to fill the space with words isn't always helpful. You need to, like, have time to reflect. Just like in yoga, you need to have time to breathe.
Exactly.
Do you want to kind of talk about, like, do you remember what your first appointment, at least with your current mm-hmm. person, was like?
I remember my very first.
Because people are probably going to, who haven't done therapy with me, I want to know, like, what does it look like when I go in?
So, I won't lie, I was pretty nervous, as most people are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are before they go into therapy for the first time. There's a lot of, like, in movies and TV shows and, like, especially, like, back in the day, it was, like, she's going to the therapist's office. She sits, like, in Freaky Friday. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They walk in and they're like, yeah, he's really, yeah, yeah. And she's like, and how do you feel about that? Like, it's, like, it's, or not just that, but, like, a lot of times in, like, old sketches, it would be, like, lay down on this couch, close your eyes,
and, like, not even looking at the therapist, you're facing away
from
them.
And it would be like, tell me about your dreams. And the therapist is, like, writing furiously on a notepad.
Right.
Like, dream. Father equals da-da-da. It's like, you know. So I really didn't know what to expect. The first time I went, There was a little waiting room.
Mm-hmm. And were there other people in it?
No.
Just you?
It was just me. And I was like, ooh, this is comfy. Like, I was at Syracuse. I went inside, and she was like, hi, how are you? And I remember I didn't know whether I should, like, shake her hand or hug her.
Give her a kiss on the cheek. Two kisses. This is France.
I was like, is this correct? No. We kind of just were like, hey, I just gave her a wave. I sat down on the couch. She was like, take a seat, make yourself feel comfortable, like whatever you want. And there was just kind of like a comfy couch and then like a comfy chair across from it. Like mm-hmm. not like too close, not too far, just yeah. like perfect
that
space.
That feng shui is really important.
Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't like a room with like clouds hanging from the ceiling. It was just like a regular room with two seats facing each other. And, you know, I did have a couch, but I chose to just like, when I first started my first day, I just like sat properly, like sat up straight. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, I was kind of like leaning back, lounging a little bit. I got more comfy. But like, I remember I just sat up straight and she was kind of just like, how are you? And I was like, I was so nervous. I didn't know what to say. But I remember being like, okay, well, the reason why I'm here, like I wanted to give her the context. And I just remember being like, okay, well, the reason why I'm here is because I've been feeling really anxious, I guess it is. Like, I'm having a hard time breathing. And she was like, do you mind if I write some of this down? It's just for now. Like, I'm not going to do this every time. And I was like, yeah, sure. So she, like, wrote down, like, hard time breathing and, like, you know, stuff like that. And she was kind of like, okay, do you feel that every day? And I was like, yeah, like, I'm starting to feel it every day. And she was like, is there like anything tied to it? Do you know? Or like, she was just asking me the beginning questions.
Yeah. She was kind of trying to evaluate you.
Within 20 minutes, I was like sobbing about my ex-boyfriend.
Aww.
But it felt really good. And I remember this was like the first time I ever went to therapy. And this is part of my problem that I'm still working on, but I kept being like, I'm so sorry for crying. And she was like giving me tissues. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know why I'm crying right now. Like, I'm sorry. And she kind of was just, she just listened. She didn't say anything as I was apologizing and talking. And then at the end, she was like, I need you to know that like you never ever have to apologize here again, like ever. Like this is your space. I'm here to listen and I want to listen. And like you didn't do anything wrong and you're crying and that's good. And then after that, it kind of just got more natural. Yeah, obviously, there were times where, like, I would walk in and, like, the day was fine and I didn't feel like talking about anything. And I would kind of just, like, think about things. And then, you know what? Even by talking about one thing I thought was irrelevant would come into a spiral about something that was bothering me deep down. Yeah. And then by the end of the session, I was like, wow, that was emotional. What about you? Tell me about your first therapy experience. I know you were young, but
I don't really remember my first therapy experience, honestly. I'll start with my current therapist because I started seeing her almost a year ago. So I really remember like what that first appointment was like. Julia, my roommate, introduced me to her.
Yeah.
She's lovely. And it felt like much more doable because I'd been doing this my whole life. And the only reason I needed a new one was because I moved. And it was kind of like, talk to me about where you're at. And I guess my experience is different from yours because now I'm reflecting on this as like going to my fifth person.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of explaining my background to her. So like when you've been around the block a few times, you kind of understand like what a therapist's goal is. And so I kind of gave her the lowdown of like my history with my mental health and then kind of where I was currently at. So I have a history of clinical depression and anxiety. I'm recovered from an eating disorder. I currently am struggling with, you know, my anxiety is coming up again because I think I moved to a very stressful city and then kind of working through problems as that goes on. And appointments can be anything from like working through a very specific situation like I was talking about with speaking to a peer. Like you can probably spend an entire appointment modeling out how you speak to a peer. I've even spoken to my therapist about asking for a raise. Like she was my person who might be like, you know, how you have a friend who's
Absolutely.
Like, ask me for a raise. That was what my therapist did. And it was really scary to be like, okay, you're my therapist. And now I have to act like you're my supervisor and I'm asking you for a raise because they know you so well. You can spend an entire session talking about a very specific problem, or you can spend an entire session talking about the ins and outs of like your childhood and how mm-hmm. it's contributed to your anxiety,
totally.
Which can seem very overwhelming, but I've just found that it's really helpful. I think the important thing that I want to kind of instill in people listening is that therapy is work. it can feel, I saw a really incredible like meme once, and it was like two versions of therapy. One is like a parrot is going in and its feathers are super fluffy and vibrant, and it comes out and they're like depleted and sad. And that's how it can feel sometimes. You go in feeling energized and happy, and you realize that there are things in your life that are really bothering mm-hmm. you, and you haven't even been noticing them. So you come out feeling like a little bit depleted, but you know, mm-hmm. the good thing is, you know, you're going to come back and you're going to continue to work on those things.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the version where you go in feeling depleted and sad, and you come out with those beautiful, vibrant feathers. Like you have a breakthrough.
That's a meme?
It was like a meme that I saw on like hashtag therapy memes.
Oh yeah, yeah, because we do follow that.
Yeah, and it just about how the experiences in different appointments can be different. The experiences with different therapists can be different. What I really like about my therapist is that I already talked about this a little bit, but she's very careful to talk about like I'm telling you the truth, and I think that's something that therapists probably learn on day one is like you cannot like make false promises to your mm-hmm. patients for a mm-hmm. number of reasons. It's not ethical, you know, like legal ramifications, etc. But it makes me feel really good because I feel as though she wouldn't say things that weren't true.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm working through a problem, there's so many times when I do the same thing as Sarah, like I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday I actually had a moment.
Sarah's in me.
Sarah Sisonia.
Got it.
I actually had a moment yesterday when I was talking about a conflict that I'm having, and she was like, well, how do you foresee yourself solving this problem? And I was like, I don't know. I kind of want to just go dark and like let the other person wonder like what I'm thinking. And I was like, you know, that seems really manipulative and slimy. And she was like, do you think it's manipulative and slimy? Like, why do you think that?
Yeah.
And that sounds silly. Like, whoa, what are you doing?
No,
it's echoing what you're saying. And I was like,
it's so true.
I was like, I guess it's not manipulative if I'm just wanting the other person to make the first move in terms mm-hmm. of communication. She was like, right. And I was like, I guess it is insane, really, how the way that they position questions back to you can
make you completely reflect.
On your purpose. You should not go into therapy being like, this person is going to solve my problems.
Definitely not. That's such a good call. Like, you cannot go in there being, because, and you know, I've had to learn that by asking them. There were times where I looked at my therapist and said,
Tell me what to do. Yeah.
Or like, okay, well, now I have anxiety. What now? I remember after my first therapy session ever, the one I just spoke about, I left the first day and I said, I don't feel better yet. And no. She was like, Sarah, this is going to take some work. Like, This is a thing that takes time. And I was like, I still feel sad and anxious. She was like, it really just takes time. And I was like, everyone tells me that though. Like, the reason I'm coming here is because I don't want to just give it time. I want to
fix it now.
That's
my anxiety and I want to fix it now.
Yeah, that's literally, I was like, that's why I'm coming here. So that I'm not just sitting around. She's like, you aren't just sitting around. You're actively looking to improve your mental health. And you're doing something, but nothing good ever takes 2 seconds.
And also think about all the years you spent with these negative ideas being like retaught to you over and over, not just coming from your own brain and your own chemical anxiety, but these things in mm-hmm. society that like are reinforced to us. Like mm-hmm. you can't tell yourself you're good because, sorry, not to go on this tangent, but like especially women are, you're kind of taught to like apologize yeah. and make room for other people, and so when you have accomplishments you're kind of just like, well, I you dumb it down, like mm-hmm. oh, I didn't really like, I guess I got this yoga thing, but like I did like really take this shortcut or whatever.
Yeah.
Or when you do something wrong, constantly apologizing instead of yeah. like saying, you know what I've been trying to do lately is say, like, thanks for your patience, not like, sorry, I was late.
That's really great.
But yeah, no, I think these things that are reinforced to us constantly, especially as women or as people who are just like marginalized in general, that are taught to you over and over again throughout your life, it takes time to unlearn them.
Yes.
And learn new
coping strategies.
And it
doesn't take one day, yeah. And you know what? Now looking back, I've put in the work and things have gotten better. I often used to go into therapy and say, like, tell me how to fix my problems. Mm-hmm. Or like, okay, well, now I'm still anxious. Help. Like, and they just like kind of laugh at me and they say, next time we'll talk about it more. And then the next time happens and I sit down and I talk about my problems and I'm like, well, we didn't fix the anxiety. And they're like, well, it's going to, like, this, what you're doing is fixing it. It just takes time. And I just think it's really interesting because if you've never been to therapy, something that they tend to do is like Liz said, they flip questions around on you. And it's like, you'll talk for an hour and they say one question and you're like mind blown.
Totally.
And it could be the exact same thing that you just said, like what you were saying, like you're talking.
I'm being manipulative. And they're like, are you being manipulative?
Yeah. You just learn how to think differently.
Totally.
And like, if the more you practice thinking differently, the more you tend to
automatically think differently
in those situations. Totally. Or if a situation happens that you don't want to react in the same way that you've always reacted, suddenly you have your therapist's voice in your head being like, think about it this way. And you're kind of, you take a step back when something comes up and you're like, maybe I should think about this from another angle.
Yeah.
And like, even just that is like such progress.
You know? I think that therapy can also have multiple layers. There might be like concrete steps that your therapist is outlining for you. Mm-hmm. Like say you feel yourself starting to have like a panic attack or a moment where you're going to need to like regroup and hone in on your physical body. Okay, so I have a very specific note that my therapist and I worked through making, and I put it next to my desk, and it says, breathe. It says something like, breathe, give it space, walk away. So breathing, like, very simple, breathe in, out 5 times. Give it space is like, what's making you anxious? Don't push it away. Invite it in, evaluate it, and then walk away is like, okay, now you've thought about it and what you can do, now walk away from the problem. And then, okay, so that's like a very concrete step-by-step plan. And then there's just some things like what you were just talking about that make you change the way you're thinking very subconsciously. Mm-hmm. So if you're constantly telling yourself like you're like bad, you're manipulative, you're a mean person, you cheat, you don't deserve this.
You're a mean girl, Katie.
You're a bitch. Well, there's the way that therapy has taught me to live is to have a little bit more self-compassion. And I don't even think that a therapist has even necessarily said those words, have more compassion. But mm-hmm. like, it's kind of just the way that your brain starts to work when you realize,
I'm the worst. Are you the worst?
Are you the worst? No, like your brain starts to be like, you don't even feel it. Like you're not even thinking it. It's just the way that you think starts to change a little bit and you become less
it's
harsh on yourself. It's
subconscious completely.
Like you're talking about with yoga and how you give it space and you want space to just be. Therapy has really helped me to just be and like not constantly have my shoulders tensed up. They're tensed up a lot. Like I'm still anxious. Yeah. I still work through problems, but
same.
How much it's helped me just to feel like the weight of the world is not on my shoulders is tremendous.
Totally. And it really is so subconscious. Yeah, you're really changing the way you're talking to yourself. So it really is that therapists give you tools without even making it known that they're giving you tools.
For sure.
Unless they're giving you concrete tools like situational panic attacks, which I've received as well. And one of the first things I learned at therapy was, okay, I'm having a panic attack. What do I do?
Yeah. Because there's actually like workbooks that you can get to that therapists will give you. Like there are concrete steps you can take.
One of the first things I learned was like the box breathing. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So it's like almost anything you look at is a square or a rectangle.
Oh, this is going to change my life,
I feel. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
So anything you look at.
I'm looking at your TV.
Is it a square or a rectangle? Mm-hmm. So you go from the bottom left corner and then you go up and you go inhale all the way up. Hold while you go across. Relax or like release down. Hold down. And you kind of just do it in the box. And it's like you follow it. You follow the box. I don't know if this is making sense via...
It is. And I want to look something up.
That was one of the first things I learned in therapy. And that was life-changing for me because I was starting to have these panic attacks. And she would be like, wherever you are, find a square and follow the four corners to help you breathe. Do it 5 times. And... You know, and it was really helpful because it's true. Everything you look at is a square.
So it's funny you say that because one time I learned this in therapy and incidentally a person that Instagrammed it and made me remember it was Justin Bieber. It was very odd. But he tries to be a mental health advocate.
For all the times that you rang my parade.
All the clubs. Okay. So for all of his faults, he does try to advocate for mental health and he has had a hard time himself. And this... What goes along with what Sarah's saying is this fun trick I can teach you right here on the podcast for when you feel like you're having a panic attack, you either don't have a medication to help you or you just like can't get out of a situation. Mm-hmm. I've actually had a panic attack on the subway, which is like the worst place to have one because with panic attacks, like you're supposed to, one of the first things I think you're supposed to do is like leave, like get out of the current space. And that's what really makes them come on for me is like, I can't leave. And now like I'm freaking out and I can't get out of the subway and like everything's going to go badly and everyone's going to freak out. Okay. So here's what you can do. It's like using your five senses. Find five things you can see. It's supposed to be grounding. Like, you know, when a panic attack makes you feel like you're out of your out of control, it's supposed to ground you. So five things you can see. Okay, I'm on the subway, so I see the pole I hold on to, that person's backpack, that person's crossword puzzle, that woman's scrunchie, and a sneaker. Okay.
That was quick five things.
Well, I'm trying to, quippity quip. It's New York, babe.
this is show business,
baby. This is show business, baby. Panic attacks, they're real. Gotta get on it. Okay, so four things you can touch. Okay, subway, that's a little hard because you don't want to touch things, but think about things that are on your body.
The pole, that man's thigh.
The pole, that dude's thigh that's grazing me. The jacket on me. That's a really cool thing, is like noticing what's on you feeling it. Okay, so this jacket that's on me and my socks. Great, four things. Three things you can hear. Well, I turned my podcast off because I'm having a panic attack. Right. I hear, stand clear of the closing doors, please. One thing I can hear. Thank you. And then there's always the lady. I think this is a John Mulaney sketch. There's always a lady who's like,
the next stop is.
Why is the guy the aggressive one and the woman is the one being like, I think it's John Mulaney. So he did a whole sketch on it.
So yeah, the next station is Times Square.
42nd Street.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, here we go.
And clear of the closing doors, please. Okay, three things you can hear. I hear, like the sound of the subway opening. Mm-hmm. I hear the sound of the subway on the tracks, like the shh.
Yep.
And I hear a person breathing next to me. Okay, two things you can smell. Oh, woof. This is a hard one. But I smell it.
That man's pee.
That man's pee.
That woman's.
And like the smell of my hairspray that I put on this morning. Great. One thing you can taste. Another hard one. You might not have coffee, but morning breath, I taste it. I taste that like tangy feeling. It's disgusting. I'm sorry. But what
did
is it?
Did you brush your teeth?
I did, but listen, it's hard when I'm drinking coffee and kind of running around. Yeah. It's New York, babe. It's New York. Hey.
Show business,
watch
baby.
Out. I'm walking you. So,
why? Whoa.
But that's, it is the thing is, one thing you can taste, it's supposed really to make you feel connected to your surroundings so that with panic attacks, just feel like
control.
I can't. Like, it's so indescribable. It's like, yep. I'm out of my body. I can't do anything to control
sometimes
this.
Sometimes you. I think a lot of people think that panic attacks are associated with like one specific thought that you're having where you're like, this is the end of the world. Me too. One time I had a panic attack. I think it was one of my first and I didn't really know what was going on because sometimes you can't really acknowledge. Like, I don't know if you've had this issue, but one time I had a panic attack and I didn't know it was a panic attack. Okay. I was in New York City with my ex and we were just like hanging out at this like brunch spot and I started having a panic attack and I had never experienced one in the middle of New York City like that. I had nothing consciously on my mind and all of a sudden I was like, I can't really breathe right now. I was like, whew, like I'm not feeling great. And like I was like getting uncomfortable in my seat. I was trying to move. It just felt like the world was like closing in on me and I didn't even have a rhyme or reason for it. I really had to like leave the bar or the brunch spot in order to be okay and like take deep breaths. And I don't know what the point of that was, but that they can be really scary and sometimes you don't even know why they're happening. So in that case, therapists can be really helpful when they're giving you concrete tools to use in times where you can't call anyone, or maybe you can call someone but they won't know what to say, or you know, you won't always have, they give you the tools to handle situations on your own that you might not have been able to handle on your own before.
For sure. But another good thing that therapists can do is get to the root of those problems. So like,
yes,
if you are having a panic attack that's more rooted in like, let's say you did something wrong at work and like you send an email and you're like, oh my God, I didn't mean to send it to that person. That's horrible. And you start to like, okay, like, so a panic attack brought on by like a situation. Okay. Like they're going to fire me. Like, what am I supposed to do? And you start to like breathe heavy.
Mm-hmm.
When you get more advanced in therapy, it can become more like, how do you talk yourself down from this?
Mm-hmm.
What did I do? I sent an email to a wrong person. Is this going to change the course of this project? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that my supervisor is going to hear about? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that they're going to fire me for? No. Like being able to kind of talk yourself down. But of course, what I'm acknowledging and what I tried to explain with the steps you can take with this five senses, it's like sometimes it's completely out of that range or that purview. But as you get further in therapy, you can start to break down why these things are happening and how to tackle them from like a really more deep-rooted place besides trying to like physically place yourself in a more healthy spot.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree.
One thing I learned in therapy that And again, just to reiterate, I didn't necessarily learn it where she was like, today's lesson is, like, it was like, this is what happens when I go to therapy. I go, I normally talk about things that are bothering me that week, and then sometimes they turn into things that have been bothering me for a long time, mm-hmm. and then other times they're things that I don't know why it's bothering me, and we get to the root of it, which then goes to my childhood. Like, it can be different every single time. But one thing that I learned when I first started going to therapy, because that was when I first started going to therapy, like we said last week, it was in crisis mode. So a lot of it was learning how to handle when like things weren't going well in a situation or when my anxieties were starting to get the best of me. What can I do when I'm out there in the world by myself to start having a better self-dialogue? Because as we've said before, the conversation you have with yourself is the most important conversation you'll ever have. So what she did was every single time I used to say, I'm scared.
Sorry, what?
Every single time. Is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
that's what I was going for.
I keep on coming back to you. You're always on my mind. Always on my mind. Doesn't matter what I do. Woo! Every single time.
Okay. No, that was the point, though.
Okay.
Carry on.
So every single moment.
Every time.
I love how then we can't say the word.
No, we can't.
Like, who can relate?
Absolutely not. No.
So every single, no, like, but truly, like, every time that I started being like, well, I'm really nervous about this, because a lot of times in therapy I would say, I'm nervous about this, or like, I'm scared about this, my therapist responded with, and then what? Every single time. And my roommates actually, like, I didn't even know how much of an impact this had on them until months after I told them that this was the technique I learned, but they were really impacted by it. Like, they really loved it so much. Like, and then what? You keep saying it to yourself. I would be in therapy and I would say, I'm just like really scared that she's mad at me. Okay, she's mad at you, and then what? And I'd be like, well then I'm gonna lose her as a friend. Okay, you lose her as a friend, and then
and
what?
And then what?
I'd be like, well then I lose her as a friend. You know, I'd be like, well then I lose her as a friend, and they'd be like, okay.
And then what?
And I would say, well, I would be really sad. Okay, do you think you'd be sad forever? I would be really upsetting. Okay. So you would be sad. And then what? She'd be like, would your life stop? And I'd be like, no, but I would be lonely. Okay, you'd be lonely. Then what? Like, if you keep...
then what?
If you keep saying it, it's like, then what? Then what?
Right.
You lost a friend. Then what? You're really sad. Okay, so what? Like, it's not so what. She wasn't trying to say,
no,
like, okay,
you're sad, it's a
so
sense
what?
Of, like, carry this thought through and take it to where it can go. It can only go
literally,
so far.
Exactly. She was trying to be so stupidly rational with me.
Yep.
Because
anxiety is sometimes irrational.
Anxiety is sometimes irrational, and my thoughts would just take over where I would go to worst case scenario. And then once you think of worst case scenario, you're like, well, then the world's over. And then like, well, but then my life is done. The more she said, and then what? The more I was like, I don't know.
One of the things that I learned that I would love to impart on some of our listeners is this concept of positive opposites. And I've tried to use that with my friends a little bit. It's like the power of the paradox.
Yes, I was about to say that.
Which, for reference, Sarah and I learned in one of our Torah classes about like how there's so many situations in life where like it seems good, but it's bad, or the opposite.
It's the power of a paradox.
Power of a paradox. So a positive opposite was like, I was going through, I still go through this challenging time where like, I live in a very small apartment, Sarah knows. I mean, we all live in small spaces, but my apartment's like very small. I don't have a living room. So I have these moments where I feel like self-conscious, and this sounds bad, but I'm like, I feel like I don't have money or means. Like, I feel like I don't live up to the expectations of my friends or other people who live here. And my therapist was like, okay, is there a way that you can frame this conversation in your head to have a positive opposite? It's not, I can't afford things, it's I'm being responsible. And that like changed my whole perspective. She was like, what's maybe something that someone would tell you about the way that you're spending your money? And I was like, well, my dad would probably say like, you should live like slightly beneath your means so that you're not overextending yourself. And one of the ways that you've done that is to pay less rent than some of your peers. Yes, you've had to sacrifice space, but you're finding a way for yourself to save money. Like, you don't have to talk to yourself like, you can't afford this, you're nothing, you're no good, mm-hmm. like, you live in this crappy place. No, you live in a small space because you're trying to be responsible. So that was, like, something really positive that I learned, is the positive opposite, this concept of, like, this negative thing you might say to yourself, how can you flip that on its mm-hmm. axis so that you're actually speaking kindly to yourself?
I like that.
I'll let you go on with what you wanted to
say. I was just going to add that one of the questions we got was, will my therapist judge me? Mm. And I know that that's a big one, because I used to feel that way too. Like, I was scared that the therapist was going to judge me. And the thing is, if you ever, ever feel judged by your therapist, then it's probably not the right fit. 100%. Because, like, there's a difference between being scared that they're judging you and actually feeling like they're being judgmental.
Yeah.
If you're scared that they're judging you, and you can say that to them, like, I'm scared. Like, you can be honest about your fears. Most of the time, they'll probably just say, like, they'll make you feel really comfortable. And the goal of the therapist is, like I said earlier, to hold space for you. So if you are genuinely feeling judged, and this happened to me before, I felt judged by one of my therapists. I had to find a new one because
that's not acceptable.
It wasn't working for me, and I didn't. Sometimes I would go in feeling happy, and I would leave feeling sad because I felt like they were judging me. And I actually had a few friends that went to that same therapist, and they felt the same way.
Hmm.
So it could just not be a right fit,
or it could just be an uncomfortable setting for you, and you need to learn how to be able to speak to people candidly,
right,
and not have to apologize for every move you make. In fact, the thing that I like about therapy and my current therapist is I often am taken aback by how little judgment there is. Like,
mm-hmm.
I often have to tiptoe and say I'm sorry for things. And then I'm realizing, like, as I say them, she is actually saying, like, you're not – is that manipulative?
Mm-hmm.
And even if it was manipulative, she wouldn't be like, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Freaking bitch. Like,
mm-hmm.
it has never been that way. And if you – I think the more you practice, the more you can learn, like, what is a healthy level of, maybe this is just uncomfortable territory for me, mm-hmm. versus – oh, no, that person is, like, making comments or making faces that are making me feel worse.
Majority of the time, though, like, 9.9 times out of 10, they will not be – like, it's their job. And it, not only is it their job, but they're in that career. They're in the field because they're probably not really a judgmental person. Is that safe to say? Like, I feel like therapists go into that field because they enjoy helping others.
Yeah,
and
I think they can easily still be judgmental people in their personal lives, but think about all the studies that they have to, the research and the learning that they have to do. They're going through talking to people who have problems that run the map in terms of mm-hmm. mental health and situational anxiety. So when you kind of consider your situation in the scope of what they deal with, you shouldn't feel judged, because you should feel like, I'm someone that this person has experience being able to speak to.
Exactly. And, like, also, like, a lot of times when we judge others, it's either a reflection on how we're feeling.
Absolutely.
Or it's because we don't know enough about the situation. But therapists are trained, A, to remove themselves personally from the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times, I don't know if you know, therapists see their own therapist. Like, they have their own therapist.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot to take on someone's, like, emotions. And so you have to, like, release your own emotions elsewhere. So a lot of the whole point of training to be a therapist is that you, like, don't take it. It's not supposed to be like a personal, you don't take it personally. You're removing yourself from the personal aspect. And then B, you also are getting to know your patient's, like, backstory. So it's kind of like, how often do you judge someone when you know their entire backstory?
Mm-hmm.
When you know, like, it's like your best friend. Like, how often are you going to judge your best friend? Maybe you don't always agree with their decisions.
I was just thinking,
but you're not judging them when you know the whole backstory, and you're like,
totally.
Well, this person is feeling this way because of this, this, and this. So, like, I'm not going to judge them, and I'm just going to be there for them. We typically judge people who we don't know anything about.
I think that's a really great analogy.
Thank you. At the end of the day, like, therapy can be really helpful, and it can be scary at first.
But there's a learning curve, I think, is the important point. Mm-hmm. If you're starting out for the first time, it can feel scary and uncomfortable, but just know everyone who's in therapy had to start somewhere, mm-hmm. and that we've all experienced that scariness. It's like kind of going to kindergarten for the first time, mm-hmm. and, like, being small and not knowing what to expect, but everyone does it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of have to learn a new practice, and I think that hopefully these conversations can make you feel a little bit more comfortable with doing things like going to therapy.
Mm-hmm. And just know that your therapist, they want to be there. They want to provide support for you, mm-hmm. and they don't want to judge you. The whole point of their career and the path that they've chosen to take for their field is to help you. So I would encourage you to be candid with your therapist and be as open and honest as you possibly can. It obviously takes time, but if there's anyone you're ever going to be honest about your emotions with other than yourself, it's your therapist, because they're kind of a reflection of your brain, but like I said, the nice shoulder.
They're the angel shoulder. Okay, so everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode. You might remember that it's a continuation from our episode from last week, where we talked a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of finding a therapist for the first time and your resources. Make sure to follow us at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod. You can follow me at Liz Height.
At Sarah L. Sassone. That's N like Nancy. I say that every time.
And this has been...
We're playing toesies. What did I just say? We're playing toesies.
Toesies. This has been...
This has been real. And with that... It's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
See ya.
We just find out.